We're picking up on page 125. We discussed last week the prohibition of chalav akum, of milk that's milked and produced by non-Jews, and something that's mentioned in the Gemara, according to many poskim, the prohibition remains as it is, as it was. And according to some poskim, if there's government oversight such that there's no non-kosher milk that could get mixed with the kosher milk, so we said that some poskim might permit that. That was a pre-chadash, the Chazon Ish. And Moshe Feinstein had the biggest chiddush that government oversight, like we have in the U.S., is equivalent to Chalav Yisrael. So on the one hand, he himself was machmir to really only drink milk that was actually where there was supervision by a Jew. But you said that in theory in America, one can fulfill the requirement of Chalav Yisrael just from the fact that the government oversees milk production in such a fashion that no serious milk company would ever dare to mix in non-kosher milk. So that's
Sorry, I wasn't here last week, but did you discuss cheese yet? Or was just
we milk? Haven't discussed cheese yet, so that's gonna be today. But before we get there, we need to discuss a powdered milk. So that's on page 125. One anecdote I'll throw in. So I got a shayla from my sister-in-law the other day, who is in Guatemala on some sort of a service trip, and she asked me if it's okay to get coffee and not, you know, there's obviously not a lot of kosher food available in Central America, that part of Central America. So she asked me if it's okay to get coffee from a, you know, obviously from a non-kosher place. I said, well, the black coffee is obviously fine. Was there anything else that you would be getting with it? And she said, well, what about milk? So of course, my first instinct for a second was Ramosha's tshuva, but Ramosha's tshuva only applies in locales where we know what the government oversight is. And apparently the OU holds that in much of the European Union, the oversight is very good. But Central America, I couldn't, at least without research, and my hunch is that the oversight is probably not as strict as it is in the United States. So one should know that the permission to have what we call chalav akum, milk that's not produced by a Jew, so that doesn't necessarily apply everywhere you go in the world. So that's something good to keep in mind if you find yourself traveling. Okay, so when it comes to powdered milk, let me explain with the help of Wikipedia what's going on with powdered milk. Hold on 1 second. For those on Zoom, you'll be able to...
Carnation be an example of
powdered milk? Carnation?
Carnation.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, carnation is liquid.
Uh-huh.
It's evaporated milk.
I'd have to look it up to see if that applies here. But the idea of powdered milk, or sometimes called dried milk or dry milk powder, is made by evaporating the milk to dryness. So that helps make it, so powdered milk is considered to be non-perishable. So that could be helpful in certain contexts if somebody's traveling, wants milk. So that could be helpful in that context. For bulk transportation, it could be very helpful. But it's also sometimes used in infant formula. It could be used in chocolate and caramel candy. So it has broad purposes. They also note here that because of its resemblance to cocaine and other drugs, powdered milk is sometimes used in filmmaking as a non-toxic prop that may be insufflated. So if you ever see something that looks like drugs on TV and you're wondering how do they have drugs, well, it's apparently powdered milk. But that's a digression. So powdered milk. So there's a machlokas about whether powdered milk is considered to be like regular milk for the purpose of chalav akum. So the first source that's brought on page 125, source 39, is the approach of the Chazon Ish. Remember, the Chazon Ish said that if there's government oversight, even regular milk does not technically need supervision. So he goes on to explain that a powdered milk, so it's not similar to cheese and butter. Butter apparently is you can't buy milk from a non-Jew and then turn it into butter, but butter itself is considered to be fine on its own. But he says here, butter, like butter that's not supervised by a Jew on its own is actually is fine, according to many poskim. It's not brought in sources here, but it's something that comes up in a couple of these tshuvas. So he writes here, powdered milk is produced through hot, dry air, and the moisture from the milk evaporates and the dry part remains. But one can dry any liquid, and one can dry non-kosher milk just like kosher milk. Therefore, it is possible that it is entirely non-kosher milk or that non-kosher milk was mixed in, and there is no difference between chalav akum and powdered non-Jewish milk. So the approach of the Chazon Ish is that wherever you're not allowed to have milk that's produced by non-Jew, the same thing would apply to powdered milk. In the United States, you wouldn't have that problem because, according to the Chazon Ish, you'd be allowed to have milk produced by a non-Jew that's produced in the United States. But again, if we use the Guatemala example, so powdered milk in Guatemala might be potentially problematic. So with that said, the Hartzvi, who's Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank, I believe he's the great-grandfather of the Rosh Yeshiva at Lander, Rabbi Yonason Sachs. Rabbi Sachs was actually Rosh Yeshiva at YU and then switched over to Lander. He's a rabbi in Pesach. Tzvi Pesach Frank was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, if I'm not mistaken. And so he writes in a tshuva here. So you have in the bold here on page 126, source 40, powdered milk was never included in the decree. So meaning when it comes to cheese, so Chazal, we're going to talk about cheese in a little bit, but cheese was prohibited. Cheese that's made by a non-Jew is prohibited. That's from the Gemara. So that, under no circumstance can that be circumvented. With milk, so it's possible, so there were certain leniencies that were built in. And he says certainly powdered milk was never included in the decree in the Gemara. So therefore, it's not necessarily problematic.
Did they have powdered milk?
But I think that's the point, is that it might not have existed then, but that means that it wasn't included in the original prohibition, and therefore there's no prohibition with it. But he doesn't just leave it at that. He still has to sort of back up, you know, why we shouldn't consider powdered milk to be the same as regular milk. Again, he uses the example of butter. So the third paragraph, he says, if so, one can discuss the status of powdered milk according to those who permit buying butter made by Gentiles. Since it has already changed from its form of milk, and the decree of non-kosher milk has already disappeared. It was logical to say that the same is true regarding powdered milk as well, as due to the change from milk to powder, the decree of milk has been removed from it, and it was not included in the decree of cheese. So it is not similar to cheese, similar to butter. Accordingly, it is permitted for a Jew to eat it. In other words, if you hold by the poskim who say that that butter is no longer milk and butter is no longer cheese, the same thing with powdered milk. Powdered milk is no longer cheese. It's no longer milk. And therefore, the prohibitions of non-Jewish milk or non-Jewish cheese have been completely removed at that point.
Butter is more lenient than
milk. Correct. According to many poskim. Not necessarily everybody, but many poskim hold that way. So now, he goes on to say, now powdered milk also has no concern of coagulation with the prohibited substance, similar to butter. And since the powder was never included in the decree of milk or cheese, there's no concern of non-kosher milk being mixed in. As we clarified earlier, that the Gentiles careful not to mix non-kosher milk. It's not common to find non-kosher milk there, especially where there are penalties for those who forage. Therefore, there's no room to prohibit what is permitted and invent new decrees. So he's kind of putting a couple of things together here. But first of all, he's pointing out that especially when you have no concern that there's no non-kosher milk that's going to be mixed in because of the legal status, and we're not concerned that's going to be coagulated with the prohibited substance, and powdered milk was technically not included in the original prohibition. He says out of these concerns, powdered milk can be that's produced by a non-Jew would be permitted. But then there's some middle position. So Chazon Ish said that powdered milk would be the same as regular milk. Tzvi Pesach Frank says not. It's not the same. So Rav Avad Yosef in the Yalkut Yosef holds that He says, source in page 127, source 41, Avkat chalav shel goyim, powdered milk, powdered Gentile milk, arvin b'shoko avichadome. Remember, this powdered milk is sometimes used in chocolate, caramel, etc. Page 127, source 41. Ikar hadin. What source is it for you? You're kidding. Oh my god. So is there a source that's
it was 41 is on the previous page.
Yeah, no, I mentioned, but either you have an extra source or I see what happened here. There were two source 39s in mine. So you probably have the corrected edition that I don't have. Okay. Fine. It's source 42 for you on page 127. Again, my book is off from yours apparently. So he says that me'ikar din in bazet iser mishum chalav goyim. So technically speaking, according to the strict letter of the law, powdered milk is not like milk that's produced by non-Jew. Achar she'edu she'osim avkazo mechalav parot. It's assumed that the powder is coming from cow's milk, and therefore it's permitted, it can be used in chocolate. Better to be machmir, but he says for children, if you want to give a child chocolate, and it's kosher chocolate, but it's not labeled as Chalav Yisrael, so he says you don't have a problem. When it comes to Materna,
what did you have a problem with?
What do you mean?
If you have this, you have the heksher of the Rabbanut, there's a problem.
Well, okay, so, you know, as far as heksherim goes, so there's different heksherim that have... Every heksher has to decide what its standards are. Not all heksherim are created equal, and it's a big problem, especially in Israel, because you know there's Rabbanut and there's Rabbanut Mehadrin, there's Badatz, and there's you have a lot of different heksherim. And even I don't know when it comes to processed products, if there's difference, but like when it comes to restaurants, every town's Rabbanut is different. The same thing in the States, right? We have we have the OU, we have Chafke, and they're not all the same. They might have, their own poskim.
I think the issue was Chol of Yisrael. So if you mock bit on Chol of Yisrael, you have an issue whether it's Chol of Yisrael or not. Like the OU cheese is not Chol.
Exactly. So he's saying here that if you want to buy chocolate that's produced by regular Rabbanut, which is not necessarily Chol of Yisrael, like he says OU. Technically it's fine. Maybe it's good to be strict, but for kids, it's definitely not a problem.
No.
They don't. So he asked if OU, you buy Hershey's bar that has an OU and is a Chol Yisrael, and the answer is no.
It's not Chol Yisrael.
Mm-hmm. You have to look out. You have to look very carefully for a certain.
Stay away from it unless it's. He says,
"Call Israel." Yeah, well, so we'll get to the OU for a second, in a minute.
Confuse kosher with Call of Israel. It's too. Call of Israel is only a stringently on a kosher item.
Right.
Well, it depends if you hold like Rav Moshe Feinstein or not, right? Or Chazon Ish. But there are significant poskim who. That Chol Yisrael is a requirement. Chol Yisrael is the baseline requirement. The ability to not need Chol Yisrael is based on certain factors that that many of us rely on. But Chol Yisrael is Chol Yisrael itself is not a chumrah. Right? It's from the Gemara. It's just that the way we interpret what requires to be what's required to make something Chol Yisrael is a little bit different nowadays. So Ravaya goes on to say that Materna, powdered milk for babies, which uses powdered milk made by Gentiles, is permitted to give to infants since it's known that they make this milk from cow's milk. It says if there's a heksher available, that the proper heksher available, so better to go with the proper heksher. But if not, then one can be lenient. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, who was the Sephardi chief rabbi, I believe, right after Chacham Ovadia, double check that quickly. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. He was a He was the chief. So he succeeded Rav Avadia as the starting chief rabbi of Israel. So Rav Eliyahu disagreed with Rav Avadia. And he brings a proof from the fact that we said, remember that you're not allowed to have bread that has milk mixed in it. And so we discussed that a little bit, but he sees that that once a prohibit, so you can, if you change the appearance before it's baked, it's fine. But if you change the appearance after it's already baked, that's problematic. He says, we see from here that once a prohibition has taken effect, it does not disappear. And he applies that to this concept of Klal Yisrael and powdered milk. That once the milk was prohibited from the fact that it was milked by a non-Jew, so it doesn't lose its status as being Chalav Akum just because one dried it or heated it or whatnot. It's still, it was Chalav Akum and remains Chalav Akum. So he was against this leniency. Now it's noteworthy that every single posek that has come up here is an Israeli, was living in Eretz Yisrael. Chazon Ish, Tzvi Pesach Frank, Rav Avadia, Mordechai Eliyahu—they're all Israeli. So if you look on page, what should be for you 128. So they note here: it's important to note that this question is relevant not only to powdered milk but also to dairy products, including chocolate, pudding, yogurt, cake, cookies, dairy ingredients. Okay, fine, we mentioned that. In North America and other diaspora communities, it seems that many of those who drink only Chalav Yisrael milk are not lenient concerning powdered milk. In Israel, although products with the Mahadran certification will not include powdered milk or dairy ingredients, many dairy products with Rabbanut certification do include dairy ingredients. And those who accept Rabbanut certification are lenient about this as well. So in other words, in Israel, they make distinctions like the distinction of Pesach Frank and Rav Avadia, that even if you keep Chalav Yisrael, powdered milk doesn't have to necessarily be from Jewish produced milk, but in the diaspora it's much more split. Either you keep Chalav Yisrael and you keep it to, you know, all the way, including, you know, with chocolate and yogurt and cake and cookies, etc., or if you hold like Rav Moshe and you don't require something to be specifically Chalav Yisrael, then obviously everything else is fine also. So but in America it's more divided. You're not gonna have someone who only drinks Chalav Yisrael milk but will then go buy M&Ms or Hershey's bar. So again, the OU does not hold by a requirement of Chalav Yisrael, and so you can buy OU hechshered products that are not necessarily Chalav Yisrael. So people who are strict on Chalav Yisrael probably have to buy something from more Hamish companies, or like, I don't know if the OU makes, you know, certifies chocolate bars that are specifically Chalav Yisrael, but that's that.
You're saying that in this country, that people are consistent, that if you're a Chalav Yisrael person, you won't need a Hershey chocolate.
Correct. Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So now let's talk about cheese.
Could you repeat what he just said?
He was just confirming something I said before. Okay. Let's talk about cheese. Okay, so this is on page 129. This is source 44 for you, if I understand correctly. So there's a Mishnah. We'll get to the screen in a second. But there's a Mishnah in Vodazara. It says, I'm a Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Shmuel is Rabbi Yeshua, Shem HaHalchim Bederech. So one time, this is actually interesting because it relates to what we'll discuss in Pirkei Avos this week. So Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yeshua were traveling and they were having a discussion. And Amar Lo, Mipnei Ma Asur Gvinos HaGoyim. Why is it that the cheese of non-Jews is prohibited? So Amar Lo, Mipnei Shema Midim Osa B'Kevel Shel Nevela. They curdle it with the rennet of a nevela. So rennet, as according to Wikipedia, is a complex set of enzymes produced in the stomachs of ruminant mammals. And chymosin, its key component, is a protease enzyme that curdles the casein in milk. I don't know if I'm pronouncing all of these chemical terms correctly. But rennet is used to curdle milk, and when milk is curdled, so they can use that curdled product in order to produce cheese. So traditionally, the curdling process was done through rennet, which again is a set of enzymes, and that was done from rennet that comes from animals. So the prohibition of having cheese from non-Jews, again, it's not anything related to intermarriage, but it comes from, but it's under the assumption that it was curdled with the rennet of a non-kosher animal or an animal that was not shechted properly. So Chazar, Rabbi Shua responded, Amar lo, it was curdled in the rennet from calves sacrificed to idols. So if Rabbi Yeshua is correct that the cheese was curdled with using the rennet of Avodah Zarah calves, then the cheese should be prohibited not only to eat, but also to sell, to benefit from. Rabbi Shmuel says, so why is it not prohibited in Hana? And Rabbi Yeshua changed the subject, meaning to say that he realized that his answer is probably incorrect. So the Gemara gives three reasons. So this is the Mishnah. The Gemara gives three reasons for the prohibition of Kavinas Akum, of cheese produced by Gentiles. And it points out that Zegzera Chadasha, it was a new decree. It wasn't something that always existed. So Gemara goes on. So what in fact was the reason for this prohibition? And one perspective is that there was a concern that there would be animal venom, steak venom in the cheese, that something comes up with wine. Also, that supposedly Gentiles were not so careful about this, but Jews took that very seriously. Rabbi Chanina says that perhaps there'd be some particles of non-kosher milk involved, and that would be problematic. Because it's curdled with the skin of the stomach of an unslaughtered animal carcass. So that matches up with what Rabbi Shmuel said in the Mishnah. And this is how the Rambam explains it. So it's verse 46 on page 130. The Avodah Zarah thing is not mentioned, because again, it seems like Rabbi Shua was not correct. If Rabbi Shua was correct, then if I sell non-kosher cheese, then I'd be, that should be prohibited also. But it seems like it was only prohibited to eat non-Jewish cheese, but it was never prohibited to benefit from it.
I think you have to clarify rennet and this stuff is not fleishix mixed with milichix. I mean, the rennet is, he's just talking about with Avodah Zarah. He doesn't say here.
No. Rabbi Shua talked about Avodah Zarah, Rabbi Shmuel.
Business with cheese before Broyers came in. Okay.
What?
Broyers brought in the Chol Yisrael, and after that, people started eating kosher cheese. American cheese.
This goes farther back than Broyers. No, the Gemara says, again, Shmuel says the cheese is prohibited because it is curdled with the skin of the stomach of an unslaughtered animal carcass. Right? So it's not a Basar B'Chalav issue per se, but it's the fact that there's involvement of a non-kosher animal in the production of cheese.
Right.
So with that said, in source 46, so the Rambam says, this is on page 130, Venus Agoyim Muteris. So technically speaking, cheese produced by a non-Jew should be permitted. We said at the very beginning of the shir on milk produced by non-Jew that non-kosher milk will not coagulate the way that milk from a kosher animal will. So in theory, cheese produced by a non-Jew should be permitted. Aval, b'mechach me'mishnah. In the days of the sages of the Mishnah, gazru agvinas agoyim asrua. They made a decree against cheese that's produced by non-Jews. unless they coagulated using the non-kosher stomach lining of animals that they slaughter. And you need rennet in order to make the cheese. Now, Rambam says, the Im Tomar, and this is the fact that Rambam's going back and forth like this is unusual for the Rambam. He usually just tells you the facts. But he says, the Im Tomar, maybe you'll say, Balo or Hakevadav or Karton, who Amei Obichav Sha'amad Bo, the stomach lining is negligible in relation to the amount of milk. We said that there's a concept of Batel B'Shishim. So the rennet is minuscule compared to the rest of the cheese. So whatever's non kosher involved here should be nullified. It should be insignificant compared to the rest of kosher cheese. The Rambam answers Bimneshu Hamamid Esagvina. The concept of Davar Hamamid, the very ability to create the cheese comes from the rennet. And if the thing which creates the cheese is prohibited, the whole davar ha'aser husha amid hare hakol aser. Meaning, it's one thing to say baltav shishim that I accidentally put a little bit, and I put a drop of milk into my big pot of chicken soup. So, you know, my chicken soup did not depend on the milk, and it's completely nullified. But when you need the rennet in order to create the cheese, even if it's baltav shishim, because you need the rennet in order to create the cheese, that's insufficient. So, therefore, non-Jewish cheese was prohibited by the sages of the Mishnah. Now, he goes on to say, "Gvinish ma'midin osa akum ba'asavim b'me peros." So if you use rennet that's derived from grasses or fruit juice, so some of the Gaonim ruled that it's still prohibited, where the sages made the decree regarding all cheeses, whether they coagulate them in something permitted or prohibited, lest they come to coagulate in something prohibited. So, Rambam says that some rabbis prohibited the use of cheese produced by non-Jew, even if the rennet was vegetarian, right? So they actually explain here that there's vegetable rennet.
That's rennet,
and there's microbial rennet also, which so they note here that that generally speaking, kosher cheese is generally derived from microbial rennet. But he says that some Geonim prohibited non-Jewish cheese even if the rennet was vegetative. However, Tosfos say the gambar bemekomos yesha ochlim osamim neshma minim osab prachim. In some places, they eat cheese that's produced by non-Jew because they coagulate them with shrubs. The gam geonim narvona hitiru tam makoma mitam shma minim osab prachim. So the sages of Narvona, the rabbis of Narvona, allowed cheese that was made by non-Jews if we knew that it was being done with vegetative products. So Shulchan Aruch. So now you have a machlokas between Rambam and Tosfos, or potential machlokas between Rambam and Tosfos. And Shulchan Aruch rules that Gvinos in source 48, page 130, Gvinos ha'ovde kochavim asrum mipnei shemaminim osam be'or kevas shchitasam shehin nevela. Cheese of Gentiles is prohibited since they coagulated with the inner lining of the stomach of a nevela, of a non-shechted animal. And then he says, V'afil himidua ba'asavim, even if it was coagulated with grass, it's still prohibited. And the Ramah goes on to say, V'chein menag, this is the custom, v'ein lifrot skeder, we should not breach the boundary. In some cases, the Ramah is very strong on menag, you should know. Sometimes the Ramah will say, Horetz geder yishechenu nachash. But there's a pasuk in Kohelet that says one who breaches a fence will be bitten by a snake. So he doesn't use that expression here. But the Ramah felt very strongly that even when you might be able to find some leniencies, when the custom is not to do something and you breach that custom, it's considered to be quite bad. So both the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch seem to agree that that the cheese made by non-Jews is prohibited if there is obviously if there's no Jewish supervision involved. Yeah. The Ramah says v'chein haminhag. This is the custom. With that said, when the Ramah is saying that this is a custom, that's basically at this point it's a halacha. What? That's what most people do because it's a minhag. Sometimes is binding in halacha. Somebody once pointed out, it's like if you take a highlighter and you go through two highlighters, you go through Shulchan Aruch, what's minhag and what's not a minhag? Or if you go through Mishnah Berurah, it's not like one extreme to the other. Sometimes minhagim become codified in halacha. We just have a couple of minutes left on the Zoom, so I just want to make sure that we finish. So Moshe Feinstein paskins that when it comes to soft cheese, when it comes to white cheese, so for example, cottage cheese, cream cheese is included in that also. So since there's no rennet involved in those cheeses, but they coagulate themselves, you don't use rennet to do them. So they were never included in the decree against cheese produced by a non-Jew. That said, the Aruch HaShulchan disagrees with that. He says, "Mikol makom is b'mkomo omed." Nonetheless, the prohibition still stands. So with that said, last verse here on page 132, I guess it's source 51 for you. So what kind of cheese must be Gvinas Yisrael? What cheese must be produced by a Jew? Common practice adopted by many kosher agencies based on Rav Moshe, also the Psaka of Rav Henkin. They were the two poskei hador of their time. The custom was to follow the opinion that the Gzera of Gvinas Akum was only declared on hard cheese, and only hard cheese used rennet to form into curd and was therefore subject to the prohibition. Soft cheese, such as cream cheese and cottage cheese, also called acid set cheese, does not need rennet to coagulate. And therefore is not subject to the rule of Gvinas Akum. Some are strict, but again, it seems like if one wanted to buy cream cheese or cottage cheese that was produced by non-Jew, not under Jewish supervision, so in theory that would be fine. So that's the idea with cheese. Remind you, I don't know if I mentioned this as frequently as I should, but there's always an outline that's published at the end of each section. So if you want a summary of the laws of Pat Akum, Chalav Akum, and Gvinat Akum, so you can find that at the end of the section. Mirz Hashem, next week we'll begin talking about Tvila Kalim, the requirement to immerse utensils that are bought from non-Jews before use. All right, thanks everyone.